Coming up on Golf Today, we have Phil Mickelson's latest comments on the Super Golf League, his views on Saudi Arabia, so-called sports washing, and why he might hitch his fortunes and future to a rival of the PGA Tour. Meanwhile, other players like world number one John Rahm and Rory McIlroy taking an opposite approach, pledging their loyalty to the PGA Tour and admitting they are growing tired of the discussion altogether. And Tiger Woods Genesis Invitational Tournament host talks the long road to recovery and when we might next see him with golf clubs in his hands. It's a busy Thursday, a busy game day. It's Golf Today.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
Riviera Country Club on a Thursday as the first round of the Genesis Invitational hosted by Tiger Woods is underway. Tiger not in the field, but all 10 of the top 10 in the world are for a tournament Rory McIlroy calls a can't-miss event on the PGA Tour. Rory off in a little while. We'll show you his warm-up, also some highlights ahead, but many big names already with a scorecard in pocket. Jordan Spieth, runner-up at Pebble, has two top 10s on the resume at Riviera, also a big part of that 2012 National Championship for Texas, won at Riviera, just making the turn and atop the leaderboard. UW CT Pan in the mix, as well as Duke's Alex Smalley, who got it late in the field after Matthew Fitzpatrick had to withdraw. And a good Thursday to you, Damon Hack, alongside Eamon Lynch. Now, usually Thursday, we don't talk about things going on outside the ropes, but today, a little different?
Yeah, there's a lot of drama going on in this game right now, and typically on a Thursday, we focus on what's happening inside the ropes. Of course, there's a lot of stuff going on outside the ropes these days in golf. Not much of it is good, Damon.
I tell you what, you're a busy guy anyway, but your phone is often buzzing. You're making calls. You're reaching out to sources for your stories for Golf Week. How busy has it been for the last couple of weeks?
It's been busy for the last few months because of this specter of rival tours that never really seemed to go away, but never actually seemed to make any progress either. But, you know, it's become a certain story this week for sure. We have the best players in the world talking about it, and some of them really kind of torching their reputation in the process of doing so.
How much of a distraction do you think it is to the players on the PGA Tour, like a John Rahm, who went to the podium yesterday and said, this is the last time I'm going to be talking about any rival leagues to the PGA Tour?
And Rory McIlroy said, I'm sick talking about it, was his words. It's a distraction in the entire industry because it's all anyone can really talk about, even though it doesn't actually seem to make any concrete progress to a day when something is announced or something actually happens. It is a distraction to everyone, both players and administrators.
Well, Phil Mickelson making news on this Thursday without even hitting a golf shot. He has been a reported target, of course, of the Super Golf League backed by the Saudi Arabian government. He said the following to the Fire Pit Collective and the writer Alan Shipnuck, they're scary blanks to get involved with. We know they killed Khashoggi, referring to the Washington Post reporter, and have a horrible record on human rights. They execute people over there for being gay. Knowing all this, why would I even consider it? Because this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to reshape how the PGA Tour operates. They've been able to get by with manipulative, coercive, strong-arm tactics because we, the players, had no recourse. As nice a guy as PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan comes across as, unless you have leverage, he won't do what's right. And the Saudi money has finally given us that leverage. I'm not sure I even want the SGL to succeed, but just the idea of it is allowing us to get things done with the PGA Tour. Tell you what, Eamon, this is the strongest indication yet that one of the best players of all time, at a minimum, has been romanced by the SGL, and perhaps even greater, could be out the door of the PGA Tour.
And it would be no loss at this stage, frankly, because it's interesting to see how an image that has been so painstakingly created and curated for 30 years has so quickly ended up in the dumpster fire, which is kind of really where we see Phil at the moment, because it's one thing to argue that the PGA Tour needs reform, whether it's administrative or financial or the equity players want out of it or the schedule. But it's another thing entirely to say that the means of getting that reform is to willingly ally yourself with people that you, as Mickelson just has admitted, are murderers, human rights abusers, that they scare you, that they're a brutal regime. For, to use his own words, a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to reshape the PGA Tour to put more money in his pocket. I honestly can't think of a more morally bankrupt statement than any public figure could make. I mean, this man is so destitute of decency that he's willing to just ignore all of those human rights abuses simply for leverage over the PGA Tour. He actually accuses Jay Monahan in there of coercive strong-arm tactics. Who did Jay Monahan behead with a bone saw? I mean, these are the tactics of his benefactors in Riyadh. And I'm sure those same benefactors are actually going to be reading these comments with a great deal of interest, because Phil says he's not even sure he wants it to succeed, that it's merely leverage. So who's using who in this? And I think the question actually goes on, Damon, to the other players involved in this, kind of romancing, as you described it, because Phil used the term we know this about the Saudis. Mm. So then the question becomes for Bryson or DJ or Lee Westwood or Adam Scott or whoever else is flirting with this, is Phil Mickelson talking for you too? Do you have the same view that the atrocities that this regime is guilty of don't matter as long as it puts more money in your pocket? Mm. I mean, Phil's reputation, what was left of it over the last few weeks, has now, I think, essentially been torched.
I read these quotes and I read them back two or three times because I was just struck by them. So I reached out to the author of the piece, Alan Shipnuck, who said that, listen, Phil seems quite relaxed about it all. It's a win-win. The tour will make the concessions he wants and he'll stay, or he won't get his way and cash in a monster payday. As always, Phil is gaming the system. Do you think Phil thinks he's Billie Jean King, you know, kind of railing for equity in women's sports, or Arthur Ashe? Or Muhammad Ali saying, no, I won't be drafted to the war in Vietnam. Do you think he thinks he's doing this for the greater good?
I think a man who's capable of making the statement that Alan Shipnuck quoted Phil as making in his phone call is capable of convincing himself of anything, because there's clearly no North Star there anymore. There's no alignment when it comes to morality. And it does end up posing a question here, because this is as close as Phil has ever come to saying he is actively working with the Saudis on this Splinter League. It also raises question for Phil's other sponsors. Mm. I mean, this is now kind of a brand affiliation that is becoming more and more toxic by the day. And it's hard to understate just how contemptible those comments are, that I'm aware of all of these atrocities, but it gives me leverage over Jay Monahan. I mean, how do you actually defend that in any reasonable respect?
Smart to mention the sponsors, some of those historically, Callaway Golf, Amstel Light, Mizzen Main. I mean, this is someone who we see all the time making commercials as well. What are your thoughts on perhaps, you know, maybe the next step for him? Because Phil has always seemingly had, win, lose, or draw, the adulation of the fans. We've seen him sign autographs till his hand hurts. We've seen him, you know, and I have seen him work a party and make people at the table laugh. But is this just a step too far? Is this the point where Phil Mickelson, to use the term from 10 years ago, has jumped the shark, and that he is so caught up in this that he doesn't even kind of read the room this time, knowing what's going on in the country, knowing that he's nearly earned $100 million on the PGA Tour, not to mention 10 from the match, not to mention millions more in endorsements, et cetera, et cetera.
And it makes you wonder how much of that is left, because there's a certain air of desperation around this conversation that's going on right now. And we saw when Phil made his comments in Saudi Arabia a couple of weeks ago, which were a little inside baseball for a lot of golf fans, was talking about the nature of media rights and what he felt they were worth and what he was entitled to. And on most issues that pop up on social media and create a controversy, there's usually a split. You know, sometimes it's an 80-20, a lot of the times it's a lot closer. You had to work hard to find anyone who had anything positive to say about Phil's comments. It rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. And a lot of fans may not grasp the geopolitics involved with Saudi Arabia and human rights questions. That's fair enough, but they do understand greed. And what they saw from Phil a couple of weeks ago was this vague patina of greed over it. Now it's just raw greed, and it's laid bare in this comment from Phil that he doesn't care about all of the other basic questions of morality and human decency as long as there's money at the end of the day for him.
Phil Mickelson has spent his life inside the ropes, getting out of pickles. We'll see what happens outside the ropes as far as this story is concerned. Well, I tell you what, folks, other players on Wednesday at Riviera, they took a much different approach when it comes to where they want to play golf going forward.
And then secondly, as it relates to the much talked about Super League, or whatever we shouldn't describe it as, you've made your position quite clear.
Not so Super League.
Elaborate, please. No, I'm just kidding. Is there any part of you that is A, tired of talking about it?
Oh, because I'm so sick of it.
Okay. So I'm not sure if I have a follow now, but is there any part of you, as just being in the position you're in, that is the least bit curious to see who's going to be the first?
Curious, I don't know if I'm curious, but I'm,
Yeah, look, I guess I'm intrigued that who would, certainly for the younger guys, like it just seems like just a massive risk and a massive, I just don't see, I can maybe make sense of it for the guys that are getting to the latter stages of their career for sure. But I don't think that's what a rival golf league is really want to, you know, that's not what they're going to want, is it? I mean, they don't want some sort of league that's like a pre-Champions Tour. You know, it's so, I don't know. Yeah, like I guess it's, I understand the financial part of it for guys that are later on in their career, but I certainly don't like, and you look at the people that have already said no, Ram, number one in the world, Colin Morikawa, myself, like, I mean, you've got the top players in the world are saying no. So, I mean, that has to tell you something. The Tour don't control the media rights in some way. You know, there may be little things that they can be more flexible on, but the whole structure of it, I mean, you know, the domestic media rights deal that basically just came into the Tour, I mean, that's a huge deal. And if the Tour don't have that control, they don't bring in all that money. So it's, I can get some of the frustrations from some guys, but and in terms of some more flexibility here and there. But I mean, the overall structure of the thing is, I mean, it's what every other sports organization does.
My one and only time I'll talk about this, where I am officially declare, let's say, my fealty to the PGA Tour. You know, I'm a PAC member, and I have a lot of belief in Jay Monahan and the product that they're going to give us on the future. So I know there's been a lot of talk and speculation about the Saudi League. This is just not something I believe is the best for me and my future in golf. And I think the best legacy I can accomplish will be with the PGA Tour. You know, you hear all those things that are going on, you know, some players might have signed some NDA, some players might have signed and committed, and I'm somebody who's kind of stayed away from it on purpose. And some of the things I heard and the rumors coming from Saudi, I thought this would be a pretty good week, especially yesterday we had our first PAC meeting. Being a PAC member, I thought, you know, I'm in a situation where it's almost a little bit of my duty to make my stand in this sense.
Do I distrust the Tour? That is no. I've had a great relationship with Tim over the years, and I've had a great relationship with Jay over the years. Jay and I started back in 2003 in Boston, and so we've built our relationship since then. So we've had a great relationship, and yes, are there disagreements? Of course, there's supposed to be. And we as players want what's best for us, and he wants what's best for the players and the brand as well. And so are there going to be disagreements? Yes. Are there going to be concessions? Yes. But, you know, I think that constructive disagreements are good. It adds to both sides. And we want to see the game of golf grow, okay? There's opinions on how the game of golf is going to grow. And therein lies the difference. And so collectively there are a lot of guys who believe a certain way, and then some guys believe differently. But I just think that in the grand scheme of things, we want to see the game of golf grow. For me personally, I've had a great relationship with the Tour. I've been a part of it for, 26 years. And as I said, we've had our own disagreements over the years, but also it's great constructive criticism as well.
I think the schedule they're proposing is very appealing to probably most golfers, I would think. You know, depending what your goals are in golf, I think the schedule is very appealing. So from that side of things, I would consider doing that for sure. From a lifestyle side of things, yes.
Have you had any discussions with them at all?
Yes, yeah. But like everyone else, we're sworn to secrecy, Alex.
Just regarding that rival league, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about the source of the money and people feeling like that should turn people off of this league. What would your response be to that line of thinking?
I think it's a bigger discussion than just a quick quote from me up here, to be honest. I can understand, obviously, that angle. You know, I think you can argue both sides of lots of things. But at the end of the day, I think my general feeling on this at the moment is that it's only a positive thing for professional golfers at the moment.
You know, labor strife, as it were, not uncommon in professional sports, potential strikes in baseball. We've seen it in football, walkouts, scabs, et cetera, et cetera. This situation, to me, it seems to be that age has something to do with maybe the schism. We're seeing some of the players in their 20s and 30s, for the most part, you know, pledging their fealty to the PGA Tour, whereas someone like Adam Scott in his 40s, a major champ with his biggest earning days already behind him, saying, you know, that was a very quick yes answer. Have you been approached? Have you talked to the SGL? It was a very quick yes.
Yeah, and I think Adam Scott used the phrase, you know, it depends where you are with your golf goals. I think it depends more where you are with your reality. Mm. Adam has, frankly, putted well enough once in his career to win a major championship, and that's how his career is likely to end. Whereas you have guys like John Rahm, Colin Morikawa, Rory McIlroy, who are sort of firmly out on the other side. And I think what we saw yesterday, or earlier this week even, was a fairly carefully choreographed kind of show of strength by the PGA Tour. They wheeled out the best players in the world, three of the top five, to say that they're entirely out on this project. And that has sort of, they basically carpet-bombed this rival league circuit. And it has shifted the narrative a little bit, because what we had been talking about for weeks, if not months, was all the rumors, you know, who's in, who has been offered what, where might they go, when will it start, who's going to jump and who's not. And that's not the narrative anymore. It's now entirely about who's not going there, because they don't have Tiger, they don't have Brooks, they don't have Rory, they don't have Rahm, they don't have JT, they don't have Morikawa. They really don't have anyone who has a great future left ahead of them in this game, except possibly Bryson DeChambeau, if he is in fact flirting with this league. And I think it's interesting to point out one thing Adam Scott said yesterday. He said it worked from a lifestyle perspective in terms of play 14 events and a few others. Adam could already make that decision if he was so inclined in terms of how much he actually wants to play. But it's the use of a phrase and a few other tournaments. I think there's a sense among players who are flirting with the Saudi league that they can play the 14 events wherever they may be and continue to play the major championships. And based on the conversations I've had, that's a delusional attitude to have. I mean, two of the major championships are open.
Right.
They can choose to qualify for them. Two of them are not open. And I think the idea that they can breeze into the major championships and or the Ryder Cup, if it's applicable, which it isn't to Adam, that somehow the rest of their professional existence carries on unimpeded outside of what happens with the PGA Tour. And I think you're going to see that the major championships and the PGA Tour are very much in lockstep in this question.
We talked earlier before the show started, and I mentioned how the PGA Tour for a time, it had a moment where it could have just devoured the rest of professional golf. It was like a big Pac-Man. And instead, we saw this strategic alliance between the PGA Tour and now the DP World Tour. We have seen, you know, Seth Waugh and Jay Monahan work together on various projects throughout the game of golf. To that point, how much do you think that the other stakeholders in the game have Jay Monahan's back, as it were? You mentioned the major championships. What about the other entities in the game as well? Keith Pelley, for example, and the other kind of big fish in this pond.
There is no gap that I can see at this point between Jay Monahan and anyone else who has voiced an opinion on it. I mean, obviously, with the USGA, it's not really their fight to an extent, and their championships are open, so there's always going to be a qualification process. But it's interesting to see Martin Slumbers in the RNA, which previously had given an exemption directly into the Open Championship to whoever finished top of the money list on the Asian Tour. Well, this Super League backers, the Saudis, bought into the Asian Tour, so the RNA, at its own discretion, took away that exemption, and that was a sign of the closing of the ranks. And to his credit, it was Seth Waugh at the PGA Championship last May at Kiawah Island who drew the line and said all money is not the same. And that was a sign that you may not assume that you're going to play in the PGA Championship, but you may not assume that you're going to play in the Ryder Cup. And the one who has remained silent on this, but certainly not uninvolved in the conversations, is Fred Ridley at Augusta National, because that is the nuclear option, because guys like Phil Mickelson will assume that they can do whatever they wish in their professional careers and show up there once a year.
As a champion.
And I wouldn't assume that's the case.
Story will continue to follow as news develops on this Thursday. And we have some more breaking news on this Thursday. In fact, a massive fire broke out this morning at Oakland Hills Country Club in Bloomfield Hills, Michigan. The flames engulfed the clubhouse, as you see. And according to the Detroit Free Press, the fire broke out in the clubhouse attic and the roof eventually collapsed. Investigation into the cause of the fire is still ongoing. Thankfully, no injuries have been reported. And many of you familiar with Oakland Hills and its incredible history in this game, host of U.S. Opens past and PGA Championships, the Ryder Cup in 2004, BMW Championship, U.S. Amateur, U.S. Women's Amateur, U.S. Senior Open, in fact, 1981, won by Arnold Palmer, 1991, won by Jack Nicklaus. In fact, slated to host the U.S. Women's Open in 2031 and 2042. We wish all the firefighters and first responders safety as they battle this fire. And still to come on this Thursday, big news surrounding three-time U.S. Women's Open champion Annika Sorenstam as she has filed an entry for this year's major championship at Pine Needles Lodge and Golf Club. Huge news day. We've got you covered on Golf Today. How about a three-time major champ, Jordan Spieth? Highlights ahead, currently out front, 5 under par at Riviera Country Club.
Golf Today. Brought to you by PointsBet. This season, don't just bet, live your bet life.
For more, we welcome in Rex Hoggard from Riviera. Rex, always great to spend time with you. What is the vibe like on the ground right now in light of all these comments swirling about the Super Golf League?
I was fascinated by the conversation you guys had in the first block, and I think that conversation has now spilled over in a little bit more public fashion on the PGA Tour. Up until now, I think players were kind of holding whatever their feelings were towards the Super League close to their vest. I don't think anyone wanted to come out and say, yes, I'm for it, or yes, I'm against it. That seemed to change in the last few days. I've spoken with players on both sides, and I've been taking how the line has been drawn very, very hard, and it's almost become contentious. Those who are interested make the argument why they should make the move, and then those who are not are going to be just as forceful on the other side. And I don't see any ending in this in the future, Damon.
Rex, what came out of Tuesday night's PAC meeting, the Player Advisory Council? Anything concrete that the folks at home should look forward to in the future?
Nothing concrete, but there was an interesting proposal put in front of the pack on Tuesday, as you pointed out, and this is the PGA Tour's direct answer, or part of their direct answer, to the Super League. The idea is to create a three-event series in the fall for the game's best players. They would take the top 50 players off the previous season's FedEx Cup points list and allow them to compete. These are going to be international events. I was told the idea right now is to hold one in Europe, one in Asia, one in the Middle East. They talked about a team format, something close to what they do in college golf, where there would be teams of five players and you would only count four scores each day. And the idea is to have 10 captains. Those 10 captains would be pulled from the top 10 from the Player Impact Program. So you see how they're tying all of this together. Now, another interesting note from that is they would go back to a calendar schedule if they were to do this instead of the wraparound schedule that they're currently using, and that would start in 2023. Now, then the question came up, what happens to the events that are now in the fall? There's currently 9 events in the fall, and the idea would be that you would use those events to essentially play a seeding tournament. So the players that made it to the playoffs from the top 125 but did not qualify for the top 50 in these three-event series, they would need to play these events to improve their status going into the next season. Now, I talked to multiple PAC members who were at the meeting, and the response I got is that the reaction was mixed to this proposal, and it's clear they still have a lot of work to do before this becomes a reality.
A lot of moving parts. The highest reaches of professional golf. Rex Hoggard making sense of it all for us on a Thursday at Riviera. And folks, huge news out of the women's game today as well. 10-time major champ Annika Sorenstam will tee it up in the U.S. Women's Open for the first time since 2008. More on the World Golf Hall of Fame member when Golf Today returns. Welcome back, Golf Today. Annika Sorenstam's career in the U.S. Women's Open started in spectacular fashion when she won the championship in 1995 in her first appearance as a pro. Then in 2008, you might recall this, her last start in the U.S. Women's Open, said farewell by holing her final shot into the par 5, 18th at Interlaken. making an eagle. What a moment. Even a rival like Christy Kerr had to give her a hug. It's pretty, pretty cool. Speaking of Christy Kerr, she's a past champ at the U.S. Women's Open at Pine Needles, and so is Annika Sorenstam, and the breaking news of the day that Annika has filed an entry as a fully exempt player for the 77th U.S. Women's Open Championship presented by ProMedica, which will be contested June 2nd through the 5th at Pine Needles Lodge and Golf Club in Southern Pines, North Carolina. Three-time champ has competed in 15 U.S. Women's Opens, most recently at Interlaken. As we showed you, she'll return to Pine Needles, where she won back in 1996 by 6 shots.
And she did win the Women's Senior Open last year as well by a fairly significant margin as well. I don't imagine it's the $10 million purse that Annika is chasing here, but another little chapter of history.
I tell you what, this does not feel ceremonial to me. I mean, we talk about Tiger and his hunger, and Annika also has children that have gotten older and gotten more interested, particularly her son, Will. She's competed in the Hilton Grand Vacations, competed out in Lake Tahoe at the American Century. You mentioned her win at Brooklawn in the U.S. Senior Women's Open. Does this feel like something larger than just kind of, you know, saying hi and waving and you know, signing a few autographs?
I don't know at the age of 51 if Annika's necessarily going to commit a lot more time to anything beyond an appearance here or there, but she's never struck me as the type who's into ceremonial golf at all. All the greats are great because they think there's one more bullet in the chamber, always. And it's not necessarily an unreasonable position. I mean, Julie Inkster was top five in three majors in her mid-40s. But you go back 30 years to the LPGA Championship, Joanne Carner finished tied second, and she was 53 years old. And I think Annika is probably in a better state physically and with her game right now than Joanne Carner was 30 years ago.
So can she win? I mean, Faith Crocker is the oldest major champ of all time in the women's game, 45 years of age. She won the 1960 title holders. We're talking about one of the greatest of all time in Annika. I think she can go out and compete. Do you think she can take that even one step farther?
There are a multitude of reasons why you can say no. You know, the competition is stronger, they're younger, they're hungrier, they're leaner, they're faster, all of those things. But she's still Annika Sorenstam.
Okay.
And when they're on a leaderboard on Sunday afternoon and they look up and they see Annika Sorenstam's name there, you can bet it would register with them.
Can't wait to watch her play. So many lives affected this week in a positive way at Riviera. Always great seeing the 15-time major champ back on the grounds of the PGA Tour event. It was a year ago, of course, this week, when Tiger was seriously injured in a rollover accident in California. We've seen him play golf with his son Charlie at the PNC Championship in December, but self-admittingly has said he will not play in a full schedule on the PGA Tour again yesterday. Tiger met with the media and discussed his ongoing road to full health.
I wish I could tell you when I'm playing again. I want to know, but I don't. My golf activity has been very limited. I can chip and putt really well and hit short irons very well, but I haven't done any long stuff seriously. So I'm still working, like at the PNC, I'm still working on the walking part. My foot was a little messed up there about a year ago. So the walking part is something that I'm still working on, working on strength and development in that. It takes time. What's frustrating is not at my timetable. I want to be at a certain place, but I'm not. And I just got to continue working. I'm getting better, yes, but as I said, not at the speed and rate that I would like. And yet in the age factor, too, and you just don't quite heal as fast, and which is frustrating.
Let's go to Jeff in the middle and then Rex.
Tiger, two questions down here in front. Have you seen progress since the PNC?
I have seen progress. I'm a lot stronger than I was then. I'm able to hit more shots, but I was alluding to you at PNC. I was in a cart, okay? I mean, I can play weekend warrior golf. That's easy. But to be able to be out here and play, call it 6 rounds of golf, because you play practice round, pro-am, 4 competitive days, it's the cumulative effect of all that. I'm not able to do that yet, and I'm still working on getting to that point. Will I come back? Yes. Will I come back and play a full schedule? No. I said that at Albany. That'll never happen again. I can play certain events here and there, but on a full-time level, no, that will never happen again. Pick and choose my events, whether they're majors or other events, I can do something like that. But come back and playing the tour, yes, but not on a full-time basis.
Since that car accident last year, Tiger has called this rehab an entirely different animal, posted that three-second video on November 21st of last year of him hitting golf ball on the range. Folks went crazy. Then he finished runner-up with his son Charlie at the PNC Championship in December. Folks went crazy again now. Of course, we see him serving as a tournament host in the Genesis Invitational, which benefits the TGR Foundation. You know, whenever we see Tiger these days, he looks physically strong. We do have the highlights that we saw of him in December, smiling, playing golf with his son. What are you hearing when he says, well, it's not going to be a full-time schedule ever again, but I will be back?
Well, the mere fact that he's back and playing any schedule at all, I think, is more than any of us thought was likely a year ago this week. And it's certainly enough to be grateful for. But isn't it great to see just how more relaxed and open he seems to be in talking about his health progress? Because we've seen returns from surgeries and injuries over the year where Tiger was a little bit more vague in terms of the details and his progress and what he was actually capable of doing at any given point in time. And he said yesterday that if he could play the par 3 contest at the Masters right now, but of course what we want to see him in is the Masters itself. But I thought it was just great to see this kind of upfront openness about the progress he's making. And it's a little warning shot there when he says, I'm chipping and putting really well to these guys. It's, you know, when he gets the rest of that game in order, well, that's a warning sign.
Yeah, there's a lot of gratitude in his voice. He talked about the fact he could have very well lost that leg, may have had it amputated. It was like a 50-50 chance, according to what the doctors told him. But what about his future as a player? A lot of speculation. Par 3 tournament is one thing. What about the big course? What about St. Andrews, a flatter surface than the hills and hollocks at Augusta National?
Based on what he said yesterday, I'm inclined to think that it's looking beyond the Masters, more towards the summer. But I think we're going to see him before the Open Championship. Every 5 years, this Irish tycoon, J.P. McManus, hosts a pro-am, which raises an enormous amount of money for charity at Adair Manor in Limerick on the west coast of Ireland. Tiger has played that often. It typically went every 5 years, you know, 2000, 2005, 10. Tiger was always there. And I've heard from the organisers, from a source in that camp, that they expect Tiger may well show up to play there this year as well. That happens on July 4th, which is Monday of the Scottish Open, which I don't think anyone's necessarily expecting Tiger to play. But if it was part of preparation for the Open Championship at the old course, there's a good chance, even if he's only a ceremonial golfer, Adair Manor is a pretty flat golf course as well.
How about that? I mean, he continues to downplay a little bit. I'm a weekend warrior right now. There's one thing to ride in a golf cart with your son and have that rest between golf shots, between holes. It's another thing to play not just 72 holes, but 90 holes or 108 holes in preparation for a golf tournament.
He's just managing expectations here. I think he's just letting people think, you know, I'm just a broken down old crow here. I'm just trying to get back. And then suddenly he comes back and he's firing on at least 3 or 4 cylinders. That's enough to scare a few guys.
Adair Manor, St. Andrews, Augusta National, wherever it happens, you know the folks at home would love to see Tiger Woods back inside the ropes.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Breaking news today, a massive fire broke out this morning at Oakland Hills Country Club in Bloomfield Hills, Michigan. The flames engulfed the clubhouse, and according to the Detroit Free Press, broke out in the clubhouse attic. USGA with this statement just a few minutes ago, saying our thoughts are with our friends at Oakland Hills Country Club. Most importantly, we are relieved to hear that no one was injured. Along with so many others in the golf community, we have special memories at this storied venue and look forward to making more with them in the coming years. You see the notable events at Oakland Hills Country Club, Ben Hogan, the champion there, Arnold Palmer won the U.S. Senior Open in 1981, Jack Nicklaus, the U.S. Senior Open in 1991, and of course the host of the Ryder Cup in 2004. So for more, we welcome in Carlos Munares, longtime sports writer with the Detroit Free Press. Carlos, thank you for your time. First of all, what is the latest that you've heard about this devastating fire?
Yeah, exactly what you said, Damon. And the most important thing is that no one was hurt. Several of the Oakland County Fire Department came to help to limit the fire, to put it out. It's just horrible, as you can see from the pictures there. I mean, it just seems to have spread very quickly. We're hearing that, you know, possibly a lot of the artifacts that Oakland Hills has. It's a massive clubhouse, as you can see. It's over 40,000 square feet. The back porch there is modeled after the two-story porch at Mount Vernon. Just a beautiful structure. But inside, there's a lot of artifacts. And the things that stick out to me is that the members are very proud of hosting a lot of the significant championships there, the majors. And they like to say that they have every trophy that they can possibly get in golf, except for the Masters, because they even held international final qualifying for the British Open. And they were given a replica claret jug. So they're very proud of the display case. And that's on top of everything else that they might have, you know, documents and sketches and, you know, different things from the different championships that the champions have left behind, you know, irons and balls and cleats and whatever. So that we don't know the extent of it yet, but there, as we're learning, it doesn't really look good for saving some of that stuff.
Carlos, is there any information yet as to what actually started this fire?
No, we have not seen that. I've not seen that in any of our reporting or elsewhere yet. I'm sure all the details are going to come out. I'm still waiting to hear from the club itself. I've asked for a statement. And I think they're busy, obviously, dealing with all the effects of what's going on, talking to fire officials and club officials and seeing what's happened. And it's just going to be a mess. And obviously, this might be, it might take some time for them to determine what the issue was. But from what I can see, it looked like it started more. It started from the middle part of the clubhouse. That's just from complete visual, you know, guesswork, I guess, at this time. But we haven't heard anything yet officially about where they might speculate that it might have come from or started from.
Carlos, you mentioned what Oakland Hills means to golf. Ben Hogan, Jack, and Arnie and Ryder Cup. What does Oakland Hills mean to the community in Bloomfield Hills?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Oakland Hills is just, you know, it's the jewel of Michigan golf. It's the site of every big, important tournament that they've had here. It's the model upon which every other country club in the state, you know, bases itself on. And as you said, I mean, the most important thing about Oakland Hills that's been happening recently, you got that statement from the USGA, is they're trying to host another U.S. Open. They've hosted six. They want their seventh. The next open date is 2028 and then 2029. I would think that they might be, you know, in a favorable position to land one of those. They were just awarded in January two U.S. Women's Opens and 31, I think, and 42. So it's tracking toward that movement toward getting another U.S. Open. The question is, what does this do? And the big question is that there's two golf courses there. There's 18 holes on the north course, 18 holes on the south course. The south course is the championship course, the monster, Ben Hogan's monster. And it doesn't look like the fire reached the course or much of it. Hopefully that's true. Gil Hans just finished almost a 2-year update of that course, a renovation, $12 million. So hopefully that's not going to be affected, but we don't know. I mean, this sounds like an unprecedented situation where historic, you know, venue, clubhouse, course I don't know if that clubhouse is going to survive. They're going to have to tear it down and rebuild it. What does that do for your chances moving forward to land an open as soon as 6 years from now? So that's what we're really concerned about as far as what the future holds for Oakland Hills.
That was going to be my question, Carlos. Is there any sense at all, based on what you've seen on the videos that are circulating of the fire, that any of the structure might actually be salvageable?
Boy, it looks every time I look at video, you know, unfortunately it's not timestamped, and some of the local television networks affiliates had some live footage early. It just seemed to get, you know, depending on the vantage point, the one you're showing here, that's as bad as I've seen. I can't see how you can save that clubhouse at this point. The far right side of it, there's a grill and then there's the pro shop, but that's the main structure that you're seeing, the big ballroom, the big dining room where they host all their big events. And then to the left side, it's more of their locker room area, I believe, and another dining area. So like I said, it's a massive structure. When you're talking about water damage, when you're talking about rebuilding, I don't know exactly what would happen here if it'd be faster, more expedient to tear it down. And I know that it's because it's a it was erected, I believe, in 1922. It's a historic structure. They've added to it over the years. It's just beautiful inside. Everything about it screams, you know, history and championship golf. I know it would be very difficult for the membership and even the golf fans who've been to many of the tournaments here over the years to see that clubhouse go, whether they would do a replicate clubhouse or something a little bit different. But I think maybe what they might want to think about is expediency with possibly a U.S. Open hanging in the balance. You may want to get that done sooner rather than later, but it doesn't look good, does it, guys?
It really doesn't. It's kind of a tragic sight for people who are into golf. Because it is such an old historic building, it's 100 years old this summer, is there any sense of whether or not there were fire sprinklers or any kind of modern day conveniences that kind of are addressed to deal with this kind of situation?
Oh, I would guess yes. I have to tell you, I've been to the club many times, and I can't say that the first thing I looked for was water sprinklers, but I'm sure it's been modernized several times. And as you know, it hosted the 96 U.S. Open. It hosted the 04 Ryder Cup, the 08 PGA Championship. It's hosted, you know, when you go through those kind of vetting processes, you're not allowed to have kind of a, you know, rinky-dink situation where people's lives may be in danger. So I'm sure it's been fitted with all that safety equipment. But again, we don't know if there was some kind of, you know, a large scale electrical fire that you know, caught a blaze right away and people weren't aware. And right now it's kind of a quiet time for the club, obviously, in February in Michigan. So if people were not aware of it soon enough, it could have spread quickly. It looked like it did spread really quickly. But depending on what the origin source was of that, and it's a wooden structure too, at least on the exterior. So that probably doesn't help its chances for containing the fire. But yeah, it's I'm sure it had as many safety, you know, safeguards or sprinkler systems, whatever it might be, that you'd have to have right now.
Reports so far, no one injured, and that is good news. Carlos, thank you for your time on a very tough Thursday.
My pleasure, guys.
Rory off in a shade under 20 minutes from now, alongside Victor Hovland and Hideki Matsuyama, calls the Genesis can't miss event on the PGA Tour. Loves the course, loves Los Angeles, the vibe. His first PGA Tour start since winning the CJ Cup in Las Vegas in October. And, you know, he's been his usual thoughtful self in the press room this week as we watch him warm up on the range, answering questions about the shifting sands in professional golf. But he also talked about his upcoming schedule and why he is shaking things up.
I'm sort of doing what I sort of usually do here. Bay Hill players, still on the fence about the match play, whether I play or not, but I'll definitely play San Antonio and then Augusta. Sort of want to play my way in. It's, you know, you say you don't make the weekend at the match play and you don't play San Antonio, you've basically got 2 weeks off before, you know, you tee it up in arguably the biggest stroke play event of the year. So, you know, your last competitive rounds are match play, and then you don't have, you know, you've got 2 weeks off. So that seems like a little much to me, and it's nice to feel like I play my way in. And played San Antonio once before and played pretty well, so going to do that.
Thoughts on that, Rory, adding San Antonio potentially? He finished runner-up in 2013, two shots behind Martin Laird, trying to find a little heat in advance of the Masters.
And his plan was to play that tournament in 2020 as a run-up to the Masters, because he's always felt he performed better in majors when he played the week before. But of course that tournament was cancelled as the PGA Tour went into shutdown mode during the pandemic. But Rory's been working a lot on his game recently since that disappointment in Dubai a couple of weeks ago. He spent a week in Northern Ireland introducing his daughter Poppy to the extended family for the first time. He hadn't been there in 2 years. Worked quite a bit that week with Michael Bannon, as weather permitted. But Michael Bannon was also in Palm Beach with him last week, and they're working specifically on Rory's thinks he gets He needs to get a little more online at the top of the swing. He feels as though he gets too far across the line and then drops under the plane on the way down. So that's what he's been focusing on with a great degree of determination since. But, you know, as we saw yesterday from him, Damon, there was a lot of topics that came up with Rory, and some of them are kind of ancillary to this whole breakaway league conversation and were the direct impact of that rests, including with the choice of the next European Ryder Cup captain.
Mm. I mean, that depends on where guys see their future and where they want to play.
I think I don't know if a decision's coming soon or not. I'm not a part of that that sort of setup and that board, but it depends on, you know, where guys want to play their golf in the future is where the, you know, is where the European captaincy is probably going to come from.
Seemed like there was a pretty clear kind of, you know, succession plan. You had Westwood and Henrik and G-Mac and Poulter, and those guys have been rumored to be targets of this Super Golf League.
And everyone has assumed for a very long time that Phil Mickelson would be the Ryder Cup captain at Bethpage in 2025. The decision would typically have been made by now on a European captain. I talked to someone who's involved in that process earlier today, and they said the post-mortem is still going on from what happened at Whistling Straits, but they expect a decision on who the next captain is pre-Masters. And when I asked how the rumours and news about breakaway leagues was going to impact that, I was told that I should expect the decision to be perfectly aligned with that of the PGA of America, by which he meant that you will not see captains who are in any way involved in this breakaway narrative. And on the European side, that points to Luke Donald as being the favourite. He's not been part of any conversation about a Super Golf League. He is a former world number one. The fact that he hasn't won a major doesn't mean anything, because Europe has a long history, even in the last 35 years, of non-major winners who've been successful Ryder Cup captains. And other guys like Henrik Stenson, who's also kind of on the block for this job this time around, is part of that narrative, as is Lee Westwood. So they may find themselves out of luck. So it seems to point towards Luke Donald. Paul Lawrie, the 1999 Open champion, Carnoustie, played a couple of Ryder Cups. He's expressed interest in it as well. So you could look at him as a potential dark horse too.
And throughout it all, Rory McIlroy in the middle, and like much of his life, sometimes between the middle of two different worlds, you know, asked about his state of his game, looking for more consistency, asked about the state of the pack meeting. You know what? There are a ton of guys out here that are going to be rich if they play well, and asked about the Ryder Cup as well. How do you think he handles going about the business of trying to put on a green jacket while being pulled this way and that, not just in press conferences, but really on some of these big ticket items in the game?
Well, I think that will decrease right now. He spent the last year as the chairman of the Players Advisory Council, which is right in the middle of these kind of conversations about the future state of both the PGA Tour and the broader men's professional game. So hopefully that distraction goes away. And, you know, he's clearly been working on his game. He had a spell with Pete Cowan last year. He's back now with Michael Bannon. So he's searching for consistency out there. And he's where he has found consistency and clarity is on the just simply being a moral voice in this game. You know, he made a very astute point yesterday when he said that any breakaway league was starting to look awfully like a bridge to the Champions Tour for guys who don't really have a lot of runway left on the PGA Tour. And he said, you know, his financial situation is a lot better now than it was 10 years ago, but he still only uses the same three or four rooms in his house. And that's what they call perspective out there. And, you know, he was the first guy who made it a moral issue in terms of the financing for any breakaway league when he said, quite simply, I didn't like where the money was coming from.
Yeah, did everything but call those guys long in the tooth who are considering jumping ship on the PGA Tour. Rory in his first start overall since slicing that approach into the water in the par 5 finisher in Dubai to finish solo third.